Welcome to the OT for Life podcast. Thank you so, so much for being here. This week, I've got the second episode of the OTA Fieldwork series. Chantal and EJ return after 3 weeks of fieldwork to share all that's been going on, including their transition from observing to leading sessions, the importance of backup plans, and a conversation distinguishing occupational therapy's unique value in mental health services. If you missed their first episode, definitely listen to episode 43 to hear where the girls started before fieldwork began. The response to this series has been absolutely amazing, with so many OTs being excited and inspired, and I wanted to take a second to just share some of the comments with you. Lauren Burns mentioned that she's super excited to follow the students' journey, and a lot of what was said on the last episode resonated with her since she recently finished her Level 2 fieldwork placements. And Ashley Pruitt commented that she listened to the episode on her way to and from fieldwork the other day, and she said she loved it and she thought that all the advice was great. I can't thank you enough for all the comments on Facebook and Instagram. They mean the world to me, so definitely keep them coming. So let's check in with Chantal and EJ and see where they are now.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Welcome back to the show, Chantal and EJ. How are you guys today?
Good.
I'm doing fine.
And I know this is an exciting time because you guys are now has it been three weeks already?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Time's going by so fast. And so you guys have had 3 weeks of fieldwork since the last time that we talked.
Wow. I know. It doesn't feel like that long.
After next week, we're going to be halfway done.
I know. I'm so excited.
Me too.
That's insane. That is absolutely insane. Like, you guys are almost already halfway done.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But it's going to start to get more intense. So it's also nerve-wracking a little bit.
Do you feel like it already is intense? Like, has it been a lot in the past couple weeks? Or still kind of just cruising and learning and soaking up as much as you can?
For me, it's been a lot of sitting back and learning. And then now this week we'll be co-leading groups. So I'm nervous about that. Whereas I was just kind of joining in on the groups and participating. Now I will have to help run the groups.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Also, I'm nervous.
That's okay. It's perfectly fine to be nervous because it's a change. It's a change to just go from observing and just kind of following somebody else's lead to then having to start taking more responsibility and having to start doing more yourself.
Yeah. After our last placements, I was looking forward to the new placement to just be able to observe for a while because by the end you're doing everything. So it's like, oh, it'll be nice to observe again. So now it's starting to get a little more hectic.
And I feel like this is right around the time where that big shift is starting to happen, where it was a lot of observation and reading reports and probably like writing stuff down and just kind of reflecting and thinking about. And now it's like kind of embarking on that, having to plan and having to do and shifting from like observer to doer.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much since like the second week. I think that during the second week, I ran my first group. And then like last week, I ran my own groups.
So you've already had a couple where you've been leading them?
Yeah.
And how'd that go?
It's been interesting, especially in mental health. Like, some people will be really into the groups and some people won't. And some people are like having like active delusions during the group, which can be kind of like stressful and difficult to manage and redirect. And then sometimes I'll like plan, like the other day I planned like this big group with the smart board, and then we went to go get the smart board and they're like, actually, we sent the smart board to IT to get repaired. So it was like 2 minutes before my group and I had to like come up with something else because I couldn't use the smart board. Yeah. So a lot of thinking on your feet and a lot of like, because when I'm an inpatient, because I've been floating around between inpatient, like one day I'll be on the guy's unit, one day I'll be on the lady's unit, and then 3 days I go to two different outpatient residential. So one of the residences is like across, it's like on the same campus as the hospital, and it's more like a step down from the hospital, but it's not quite as independent as the other residents that I go to. So like, I think floating around kind of makes it go by faster because it's definitely something new every day. But an inpatient, like they have groups all day from like maybe 9 or 10 to 3 o'clock. Besides, it's like a hour lunch break in between, but they are in groups like all day. And OTs run groups, the nurses run groups, social workers, psychologists, like almost every discipline runs groups. So it's like a kind of hard to like distinguish. Like I had to have a conversation with my fieldwork educator about like what's distinguishing OT from all the other disciplines that are running groups, because they all seem pretty similar. And then also because they're having so many groups every day, it's kind of hard to come up with new things to make sure that they aren't all doing the same things. Because sometimes it can seem kind of like repetitive, like they're all doing some type of craft or all like talking about the same things. And it's kind of hard to come up with new and interesting things for them to do every day since they do have groups all day every day.
Okay, there's two things that I want to jump back in that you just mentioned, because I feel like these are two really important concepts, especially for fieldwork students that are getting exposed to lots of different practice areas and lots of different things that they may or may not have seen before. And so let's stick with distinguishing the uniqueness of occupational therapy compared to the other groups and the other professions that are also kind of running those groups. And mm-hmm. So I know you said that you mentioned that you had a conversation with your fieldwork educator. What were some of the feedback or what were some of the takeaways that you have learned to kind of keep in mind to make sure that you are promoting the uniqueness of occupational therapy compared to the other disciplines that are also running groups?
Well, she said like during the group, she's always looking at function. So even if they're, it may seem like they're just doing a craft, like she's paying attention to like how well they're attending, like what their cognition levels, their ability to like problem solve and a lot of like cognitive things like that. So like I've been doing like, she said she's always assessing like when she sees people participating in group, whether, you know, if they are participating, if they're not, if they are, like how well are they able to follow instructions. So I've been, you know, really observing all the group members as they participate to like really see their level and see like on the outside it may seem like they're just doing a craft, but comparing to their performance to how it was the day before, or you know, just seeing like, well, they're really engaged in this, like it doesn't seem like their delusions are affecting them, like you just look at it from a different lens.
Completely. And I literally was thinking the exact same thing that you said. Like from the outside, it looks like everybody's doing kind of the same thing if they're doing a craft or like some sort of activity like that. But then the underlying issues of what makes it related to occupational therapy is the functional piece. Yeah. And all of these kind of underlying skills that you as the therapist and you as the student are looking at, you're addressing, you're modifying, you're changing, you are adapting, all of these kinds of things. So I think that is exactly where I was thinking when I asked the question. So yeah. And I wanted to jump back because you were talking about the incident with the smart board and having something set up and then basically not being able to utilize the materials that you needed. I'd love to just hear a little bit more about what went on as that was happening and as you realized like, okay, I had this plan and I can't do it. What am I going to do now? And if you've had any reflections since then?
Well, like all of the different units, like in the OT area, they'll have like different activities or, you know, supplies and resources that you can use to like run your groups. So like one thing the fieldwork educator had mentioned to me like before is like become familiar with like all the things we have because you may need to use them like at some point. So I had seen one little, because it was a like a living skills group, and a previous student had made like this binder of like example of a grocery store layout that had like dairy, like all the different grocery sections in the aisles. And then she printed out like little pictures and laminated them of different objects or like different grocery items that you would find in the store. And then we played like this game, like find it on the map, where would it be located? So I just used that to run the activity so they could become familiar with like a grocery store layout and, you know, where to find different items. And then before we started the group, I did like a brainstorming, like, can you guys think of all the grocery stores in the area or like past grocery stores that have closed? So they're really interested in that. And we just did that. But basically, my point is like just being familiar with the resources that you have so that like if something, if you can't use your original plan, you know that there is some backup that you can run to. Like I had never done that grocery activity with them before. So it was like, you know, it was new to me, but at least I had already seen it because I went through the supplies and I knew it was there.
I think that is such great advice right there, because I think so often it's easy to just say, okay, here's my plan. This is what I'm going to do. And I'd say more often than not, the plan doesn't work out exactly how you want it, whether it's material based, whether the client doesn't want to do it that day. And I think it's so important that you said just become familiar with other things that you could have at your disposal, because you will never know when and if you will have to use it. I think that's just really solid advice, especially for students that are within their first couple weeks, like taking the time to look at the resources and explore the materials and explore everything that your facility has. So if you ever need kind of that like ace in your back pocket, that backup plan, you at least have some area that you can go to and say, okay, I know that I saw this. Okay, what can I do with it? Because it sounds like for you, EJ, like you only had a couple minutes to really like formulate what you were going to do there.
Yeah, like literally like 2 minutes.
Yeah. Chantal, have you had any experiences like that where you've really had to think quickly and try to come up with something that maybe you hadn't been planning on?
Not so much here because I haven't run groups yet, like I had said, but my fieldwork educator has had to come up with different things because the group wasn't going as planned. But I haven't personally yet run into it here at this one. At my other placement, definitely.
Okay. Did your fieldwork educator talk you through like her kind of clinical reasoning as she was trying to figure this out? Or did you guys talk about it afterwards?
We talked about it afterwards because as any area of occupational therapy, things don't go as planned. So she just explained that we just had to do something different because no one was paying attention. And I had already noticed that, obviously, because I was in the group. But everyone seems to do well when they're just like transitioning to something else if it's not working out. So, I mean, I guess I just have watched all of them do it and know that it is happening all day, every day, that they have to think of different things to do.
So you were able to kind of identify and realize like, okay, this isn't going exactly maybe as smoothly or maybe how I was expecting it to go. Were you already trying to come up with other things, maybe just in your head, even though you weren't leading the session, of, okay, maybe I would go try this activity next, or I'd switch it up here?
Yeah. So yesterday, an example, we were doing an adolescent group, and those tend to, I mean, they all tend to not go the way you plan them. But after the session, and we were talking about it, she's like, what do you think about this group? And I gave her my input as on the weekends, maybe not have such a structured group for the adolescents because it is the weekend. And, you know, there's less of them because of visitors and everything. So maybe just like have less of a structured topic to maybe keep their interest a little bit longer.
Okay. All right. So what do you guys think has been going well so far? What are things that you're enjoying and what are things that you feel like you have some strength in doing within the past couple weeks of your fieldwork?
I think like pretty much the biggest skill or what I've been using a lot is like therapeutic use of self has really come into play in this setting because you really have to connect with the patients. And I feel like what we learned in that class, we also did a lot of groups in therapeutic use of self. And it's really helped me connect with the patients, especially some of the, like there's been one patient in particular and he has a history of being aggressive. And a lot of staff are like really cautious around him because he's been so aggressive. But like I saw him in the hallway, I was on my way out and I saw him and he's like, hey, what's up? I missed you. And I just took that opportunity to like connect with him and see how he's doing. And he did tell me like, I've been having a lot of code greens, which is like a psychiatric emergency. And I just asked him like, why? Like, what's been going on? And he told me he was like upset because his family didn't come and visit him. And he thought that they were. So he was like taking it out on the staff. And I was just like, well, what are some of your coping skills that you've been learning? And he told me like singing and dancing is one of his coping skills. So I was like, why don't you just do that when you get upset? Like go dance or go sing instead of attacking somebody. And he was like, he'll try it next time. So like just, you know, building these connections, like everybody remembers you. Like it's for me when I'm on one unit on Mondays and one unit, the ladies unit on Fridays, and then throughout the week, other places. So it's some places I'm only there once a week. So it's like, I don't get to build the same connections I would if I was seeing them every day, but like they still, you know, remember me even though they only see me once a week. So that's really come into play.
Yeah, I love that you just said that, like taking time to connect with the patients, like even though this was just kind of like a random occurrence, just like walking down the hall. But I have a feeling that you just taking the time to like say hi and just connect with that patient probably really stood out to him. It might have even given you a little bit more insight onto kind of what's going on with him to then kind of be able to advocate for him a little bit more. Like, it's not that he's just trying to be difficult in the sessions. There's actually some sort of trigger that is making him unhappy. His family didn't come visit him or didn't stay long enough, or, you know, like there was something, and you were able to notice that in the session. And then you took it that one step further to say, well, what are things that we can do about that? And my guess is now that you know that he likes like singing and dancing, you might even be able to incorporate that into some of the groups too, even if it's like the very initial thing that you do, just to kind of get everybody going and like engaging.
Yeah, like towards the end of the sessions, like if we have enough time, like I try to at least allocate like 10 minutes for everybody to pick a song that they want to listen to, and then we can just, everybody can listen to their own song at the end to like wind down, and then they like look forward to it because it's like, okay, if I participate at the end of the session, I know I'm going to be able to hear my favorite song.
I love it. That's great. Chantal, what do you think's been going well for you?
So the first couple of weeks and ongoing, my observation skills have been really good. I'm picking up things easily and mentioning it to like my fieldwork educator. And some of the times she doesn't even notice the things that I'm saying. So I would say my strengths would be my observation skills. And I was extremely comfortable with the patients right away, which in a psychiatric setting might not always be the case. My fieldwork educator had said that, you know, there are people who are like deer in headlights, and I was instantly comfortable going on the units. Where I am is a hospital, so there's all different diagnoses. So I don't know. I'm just really comfortable with even some of the harder cases I'm comfortable with. I mean, I still get nervous sometimes, but not very often so far.
And I feel like that might be kind of a big change for you, because I think there was a lot of kind of anxiousness and a kind of a being unsure going into this placement. And so for you to kind of jump in and feel comfortable right away, I think that's huge. That's great.
Yeah, I really like the patients. They're funny, you know, and they're just like everyone else. They're just sick, you know, for now. So I really enjoy talking to them and working with them.
Awesome. Well, let's kind of switch gears and let's talk about some things that might have been challenging for you guys. What are things that you've really kind of had to overcome within this placement?
I would definitely say two things. One, like trying to engage people who don't want to participate or who are like really adamant, like they're so out of touch with reality. And it's like the other day I was doing an activity and one of the patients was like, is this a game? And like, I didn't know like if I should say like, yes, it's a game and maybe she'll want to play, or like say, no, it's not a game. It's just an activity. Cause it was kind of like a combination of a game and an activity, but I was just like, okay, yeah, it is a game. And like, everybody's going to participate. And she's like, well, I'm God and I don't play games. Cause if you play games and you lose, you go to hell. And I'm like, that really caught me off guard. Like, what? Like, how do I respond to this? And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, you don't have to participate. You can just observe and everybody else will participate. And she was cool with that. But it's just like, some people say like the most bizarre things and it's like, you don't know how to respond to it. Or like some of the things they say, you don't know if they're being truthful, like because they're out of touch with reality. Like some stories they have, they are true. But a lot aren't. And it's like, you don't want to entertain it if it's not. But like just learning how to react to some of the patients can be difficult.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like learning how to read them. And yeah. I'm sure within the mental health setting, that can vary from day to day. And where some days your interaction and how you interact with them, you might be able to really kind of hone in and get right away. And then you try to do the exact same thing the next day and you're dealing with somebody who is going through something else, or maybe there's something else that's kind of like popped up. And so mm-hmm. that strategy might not work. And so it's really trying to like read them in the moment, figure out what's going on, and then being able to react to get them to engage or participate in the activity that you want them to.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, I can see that as being a challenge.
I would say where I am that I also have the same, that same thing. Obviously, we're both in mental health settings. I would say one of the hardest things for me is when you're working with the patients and, you know, they seem like clear and bright, and then like their affect is clear and bright. And then the next day it's not. So I find like it gets a little discouraging because you're rooting for them, you know, to be clear and understandable. And then it's a little disheartening the next day when they're not and you knew that they were. So I think that's difficult to watch.
Do you feel like it's almost like on the day that they are having a good day that you're like, yeah, we're making progress, we're getting somewhere. And then
yeah.
The next day, it's like 10 steps backwards.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and it could be their medication. It could be a bunch of things. But it's a little disheartening because you want them to be getting better, you know, and clearer. So.
And I think, too, it's just, I mean, because like everybody, whether you are in the mental health facility or just like you guys and students and other people in this world, we all have good days and bad days.
Right.
And I think it's important to just mention that imagine you guys having to go take some crazy tests and do like have to do all sorts of stuff on a day and you're just not feeling it, right? You didn't sleep well, or maybe something's going on at home or whatever, and it's going to impact your performance. And so, yeah, it's hard, but it's also such a natural part of life. And I think like the big thing for me is what I kind of try to keep in mind, especially when I see a client that maybe was doing something and now they're not, or they're not where I think they could be at the moment, is to really just kind of have daily goals or even break it down into like momentary goals. And so, yes, your overarching goal might be one thing, but if you can't even get them to that place, what are you going to focus on in that moment? And how are you going to progress them to the next level just based on where they are that day? I think at times we are always just focused on their huge goal, their long-term goal of what we want. But sometimes we're not going to get there. And you just have to focus on they are at this moment right here. Okay, what do I think is feasible for them to get to in the next minute, you know, the next 5 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
Is there anything else that's kind of been challenging for you guys?
I think, I don't know, like when I first knew I was going to a mental health setting, I think I had a lot of arts and crafts planned and like a lot of different group activities. But then getting there, like an inpatient, it's a really restrictive, like we can't have any scissors, we can't even have pens, nothing with metal. So the supplies that we have to run the groups are kind of limited just for like safety issues. So if it's like arts and crafts that would have involved scissors, like either you have to pre-cut everything or you just can't do it. I had like these tassels for bookmarks, but they had like a metal ring, like securing the thread. So I couldn't use that. I ended up just having them make some tassels out of some yarn because they can have string as long as it's less than 14 inches. So just adapting that, like, when I'm in the residential settings, they have a little bit more freedom. We can actually do like cooking groups. Like we have one cooking group in the hospital right now, but we have to use plastic knives. And even then we have to count all the knives. And then when you're done, we have to wrap them up and take them back to the office because we can't throw them out on the unit. So it's like a lot of things that you wouldn't, you know, if you're in a different setting, you wouldn't even think about like, oh, we can use a regular knife and not a plastic knife to cut onions or whatever we're making. Like it's just a change that I wasn't really expecting. I don't know, like, what I was expecting, but, like, it's just, you know, it's a lot more restrictive than I thought.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's things that, unless you've worked or had exposure in that setting, you might not even consider it going into it. And it's like, okay, let's plan this activity. How are we going to be able to accomplish it given the restrictions and given the materials that we can bring in? And so, yeah, I can see that really kind of forcing you to use your therapeutic brain to try to adapt and figure out how to accomplish something given what you can and can't do.
Yeah, like one of the therapists had ordered like these boxes, almost kind of like jewelry boxes or whatever. But when they came, they had the drawer had like a metal knob on it, like to open and close. So we couldn't use them. And like, I don't know if they were going to throw them out or what they were going to do. But there was just like, we can't use the boxes because they have metal on them. And then I was like looking at it and I was like, why don't we take the drawer out and then flip the box so that it's standing up vertically instead of horizontal. And then it turned into like a little holder, like you could put like, I don't know, makeup brushes or anything that you wanted to put in there, standing up like a little cubby thing. So that's what I used for one of the groups on Friday. I had them decorate the little holders and they thought it was so cute. And they one of the patients like carries around like a stuffed animal and like some other things, and she like put her things in it and carried it around. But I was like, you just really have to be innovative, because they were gonna let the boxes go to waste because the drawer had a metal knob on it and they couldn't use it. When I was like, let's just take out the drawer and use the box as a stand.
It's perfect. Just adapt it and you can use it in a slightly different way. And I love that it wasn't just get rid of it.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to pivot a little bit and have you guys explain a little bit more about what your days and weeks are looking like. I know, EJ, you've mentioned that you've been leading some of them, and Chantal, next week you're going to be moving into kind of co-leading and co-treating. Mm-hmm. But roughly how many patients are you guys working with in a day? How long are your sessions? And how much time do you have to be treatment planning, writing documentation, and kind of doing other things outside of working with the patients?
It kind of varies. Like usually I start my day at 8 o'clock, and the first group, depending on the day, like on Mondays, there's a little goals group, they call it, which that's at 9 o'clock, but it's only like 20 minutes. And then the next group after that will be like 10:40, or at least the group that I have to run. And then the groups are usually like 50 to 60 minutes. So the 10:40 group will be done around like 11:40. And then usually we have lunch for an hour and then start the other groups back up at 1:00. And then from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 are the last groups. So there's a little bit of time in between there to plan. But then when I'm at the other two residences, it can vary. Like so far, I've been at one of the residences on Wednesdays, but I'm going to switch next week and be there Tuesdays and Thursdays. So Wednesdays was a cooking group, and I'd still get there at like 8:00. And by 9:00, we'd start the cooking group. But then we have to go to the grocery store, get all the ingredients. And before that, we have to sit and plan with them, like, what are we going to make? Look up a recipe, write out the ingredient list, then go shopping and then come back and prepare the meal. So that usually takes from like 9 to 12. And then we'll do lunch from like 12 to 1 and then come back and have one or two groups after that. But then when I'm at the other residents, it's kind of like, to me, almost like a group home kind of setting. So there, like the residents are like free to come and go and do their own things. Some people go to work and they'll just be out in the community because they have their own independence. So it's less structured. Like they don't have set times for group, but there is one resident there that I try to do a cooking group with. So last week we did go shopping and then we prepared the meal, but it's like, I forget how many people live there. I think 12 beds. So we have to cook for like 12 people plus the staff. So it did take a while. So I think we left around 9:00 to go to the store, and then we spent the 2 hours cooking.
Okay. And your other groups, roughly how many people are in them?
It varies because some days there'll be a larger group, but I say around 10:00. But then also there's like they encourage the patients to go to the group that they're assigned to. But sometimes people don't want to come, so they'll go to another group. Or sometimes people don't want to go to their assigned group and they'll like pour into our group. So anywhere from like 6 to 10.
Ah, interesting. Chantal, is yours like that? Is it similar or is it different?
It is similar. Okay. My day starts at 8 o'clock. Typically groups, there could be like a morning movement group that we have to do at like 8:30, and that could be on unit. But usually we start at 9. Like we get everything ready for our groups from 8 to 9. And then we can have anywhere from 2 to like maybe 15, depending how many people are on the unit, because it changes every day and multiple times a day. So it's not mandatory that the patients come to occupational therapy, but we do ask everyone if they want to come. The adolescent unit, it is mandatory. They do have to go. So that's probably always our biggest group. But our groups are done by 1 because rec therapy is in the same space and they use it after we're done. So all groups on our floor are done by 1.
And roughly how long do the groups go for?
They are about 45 minutes long.
So some similarities, but some differences as well. And for you guys as a student, how much downtime are you guys getting? How much prep time? How much outside time are you getting when you're not just working with the clients?
We go on unit a couple of times after 1 o'clock. There are still like some on unit groups. So I would say, obviously, the afternoon we have less going on, but then we're doing notes and planning for the next day or for the week.
It sounds like you're getting a couple hours at least at the end of the day to set up and prep for the next day. And then you mentioned that around 8 a.m. you're kind of prepping and getting ready for that.
Yeah, like that I would say about maybe 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say probably about that. I do most of my prep like in the morning time, like before our 10 o'clock group start. I don't do too much prep like in between because I'm just trying to like get myself prepared for the next, like mentally prepared for the next group. So like I try to have everything like what I'm going to do already planned out so that I don't have to plan in between groups.
EJ, do your patients, they just come to group or do you have to gather them?
They just come. They have like their own schedule. So everybody has to be in group. Like we have an attendance sheet of like the groups that you're supposed to go to, but you're not forced to go to that group, but you have to go to a group. So, like, they have their own schedule to follow that will assign them, like, tell them what groups they're supposed to be in. But okay. They can ask, like, oh, can I come to your group instead? Or can I do this? Or sometimes the rec therapist will come and, like, say, like, I'm taking people out, like, who can go out? Because some of the patients have, like, restrictions on, like, if they can go outside or not, or, like, if they have to have an escort. So, like, some people, if a rec therapist comes down and says, like, I want to take a group outside, like, if the patient has, like, the freedom to go outside, then they may choose to go outside versus participate in their assigned group.
Right. We have to go and gather everybody for a group.
So. No. Because, like, well, the groups that are on the unit, no, they just come to it. You don't have to
search. Okay.
So do you go and gather the groups, like, a few minutes before the group starts, or is that like part of your group time? Okay.
I mean, sometimes it runs into group time, but we try to gather everybody. Obviously, it takes longer sometimes to get everybody because we all have to go together. So it takes about like 10 to 15 minutes to gather everyone.
Now, when I'm at one of the residences that's on the campus of the hospital, like we do kind of have to gather, like they do know, like, okay, cooking group is in the kitchen at 9 o'clock, but like around like 8:30 we do start like reminding people, like, are you coming to cooking group today, like, and let them know so they can start like getting themselves ready to come down. Or sometimes if they forget, we'll like go knock on their door and say, like, are you coming to group? But usually like they already know.
I think that's interesting. I wonder if that plays a role in their motivation to come to group, if it's something that they're initiating or versus you guys coming and kind of gathering them, like, oh, we have to go. I wonder if that plays any sort of role in how motivated they are to engage and participate.
Yeah, I think so a little bit, especially if they know, like, because like I said, like pretty much all of the disciplines there run groups. So like it could be like OT running a group, but then across the hall at the same time, like a rehab counselor is running a group. So sometimes the patients want to come to the group just because they like the person that's facilitating it. So I think that can make them more willing to participate if they know, like, oh, okay, 10 o'clock, EJ is going to run this group, and I like her, or 10 o'clock, EJ is running this group, and I don't like her, so I'm going to come to that group.
So let's talk a little bit about what your supervision has looked like so far. How much direct time are you getting with your supervisor? What kind of feedback, or how, maybe how they're giving their feedback? What has been your experience with the supervision process?
For me, because I have, like, I have one, the person who's considered to be, like, my main fieldwork educator, like, I'm hardly with her at all, but technically she's, like, the one in charge of me. But I'm, like, floating all around. So my main fieldwork educator, I've actually, on the days that I'm with her, she had an OT student. So I was, like, with her OT student. But her OT student last day was Friday. So Monday, I don't know how it's going to be because I haven't, like, discussed with her, like, am I just going to run the groups that the OT student was doing? Or am I going to, you know, is she going to assign me to something else? I don't know. But it varies with, because I'm floating all around. Like, usually when I'm at the residences, I do, like, the OT is with me all the time. Like, my supervisor is with me, like, all the time. But when I'm on inpatient on Fridays, I'm on the ladies unit, and the OT there, like, pretty much, like, she'll check in on me and make sure everything's going good, or she'll, like, come in, like, to the beginning of the group, and then once everything's, like, you know, going smoothly, she'll step out and go to her office and, like, finish up assessments or whatever. So, like, when I'm with her, I feel more independent because she, like, lets me do my own thing. Like, we always run the cooking group together, but for my other two groups in the afternoon, it's like she'll peek in and make sure everything is going good. And, like, you know, if I feel comfortable with her leaving, she'll leave. And I feel like that's a little better for me because I feel like it's, I don't know, like, less pressure.
You're not under a microscope.
Yeah, not under a microscope. And sometimes I feel like the patients can be influenced by other people being in the room too, like the way they're going to act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. But it's when I was at my previous field work, for the most, because it was home care, for the most part, like, you know, my supervisor was always there, like, always in the same room as me and always, you know, not up under me, but it was, we were always in the same space because there was, like, no other option. So now I have, like, a little bit more freedom on certain days to, like, kind of do my own thing and not be, like, having them, you know, stand over me.
Yeah. Chantal?
Mine is kind of the exact opposite. at the previous placement, I was running the groups and, like, the OT would go do other things, so I was in charge. Here, I am always with my fieldwork educator. I don't think I won't be without her at all. As our groups run, there are typically two, at least, OT staff in the group at all times. So that can consist of the OT and an OTA, or sometimes it's OTAs, but there's always more than one, probably because we're transferring patients from units. And also that's just how they have it set up. So I think I'll always be under the supervision of an OT or an OTA.
And are you guys finding that you have enough time to chat with your supervisor and talk about, like, prep for sessions and then also debrief about sessions and groups? What is that kind of looking like?
After our groups, we, like, after we are done dropping the patients back off, we talk in between, like, getting ready for the next group. And then also when we're doing our documentation in the office, we have time to chat about the group and how did you think so-and-so was? How did you think the group ran? And things like that. I can ask questions at any time, so that's nice. I don't ask when we're in group, though, obviously.
But it sounds like, at least, Chantal, you feel like there's enough time to talk about things with your supervisor. Because I feel like it's common with other students that, like, the day goes by and all of a sudden a week goes by and it's like, oh my gosh, I had a question about this and I didn't have time to ask. So at least right now you're getting your questions asked. You feel like you're debriefing and everything is, everything's sufficient.
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, I pretty much feel the same way for the most part. Like, there's definitely enough time to, like, talk to the supervisor and say, like, how do you think this went? Or they'll ask, what did you think about this person? Or, like, how did they receive the activity? So so far, the supervision level and communication is pretty good.
Okay. And it sounds like it's mainly in person. Do you guys ever email or write notes to each other and check back later? Is there any sort of that going on, or mainly like sitting and talking?
Mostly sitting and talking. Like for my one fieldwork educator that I don't really see that much, our schedules will be different. Like if she's on one unit and I'm on another unit, like sometimes I'll come down to her office, but she's not there. So I'll like write her a little note, like, can you check on this or something? And then I'll say like, I'll come back at the end of the day to like pick it up or see it, or, you know, I'll check back in with her at the end of the day. So most of our communication has been like leaving each other like little notes or email. But for the other people, it's like in person.
I feel like it's such a common thing that like lots of students are like, I don't have time to talk to my supervisor. So it's really refreshing to hear you guys that are like, yeah, we have plenty of time. We're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We have lots of time to talk. I mean, in between and in the office, even when we're doing notes.
Are you guys finding that you have to spend outside hours, like when you're at home, focused on fieldwork, whether it's planning or doing documentation or anything like that?
Again, this was my last placement as well. You leave work at work, is what they say. Especially my fieldwork educator has been very stern about leaving everything at work because it is the mental health setting and you do get burned out, I guess. She said, you leave everything there. So she doesn't ask me to do anything outside of work. Of course, I've been looking for some ideas to do for like groups to run and trying to figure that out, but just the schoolwork we have, I've been doing outside.
But it doesn't sound like you have to be doing it in order to keep up, basically.
No, not at all. Okay. I'm doing it on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. Like sometimes I'll try to think of activities that I would like to do or materials, but it's not like mandatory that I have to like spend hours at home preparing for the next day, mm-hmm. which is good because I mean, like, we're tired enough as it is. Like, yeah. Once we leave, I can't imagine like having to spend like hours outside of field work on field work stuff because it's enough as it is.
Yeah, I have like 3 hours with my children when I get home. So it's nice not having to do other stuff.
Yeah. In our first recording, I know that we had kind of briefly touched on working with this population and kind of the impact that it might have on you guys emotionally. And I'm just kind of curious, like, have there been any moments where you've kind of had to take a step back or you've had to kind of process through it? And if so, what are maybe some of the techniques that you've used to help you get through some of these difficult things that you're getting exposed to?
I do remember a conversation that I think it was you, EJ, myself, and another one of our friends. I had asked, are you guys emotionally drained by the end of the day? And I think that we all were. I feel like a lot of the things that the people that we are with are going through are some very difficult things. I mean, I'm human, so it does bother me, like reading some of the stuff and trying to understand. And I have gotten emotional a couple of times in group. I just kind of try to like think of something else when people are sharing some pretty I don't know, proper word, like some
just
pretty
stories that kind of tug on the heartstrings.
Yeah. And some of them are pretty traumatic, as you can probably imagine. So I try not to let them see me getting upset, but obviously some things do upset me.
How do you process that? Maybe not like during the group, but how do you process that afterwards? Or maybe a tip that you might have for somebody to help them be able to process something difficult that they get exposed to within fieldwork?
So what I try to think of is we can't carry all of these things with us. We can try to help as much as we can the patient. And obviously keeping things in the back of your mind so you don't say anything to offend them. I try to always think about things like that so I don't say something offensive. But you have to kind of think about it, give it a little of time to think about it, and then you have to kind of let it go.
because you can't take it with you.
I think that's great advice, because it's not something that you just can't, like, not even think about, right? Because it is emotional. It does impact you and it impacts people. But it's also something that you can't just sit and dwell on, because it's just going to continue to either drag you down, or, you know, you kind of need to, like, work through it and process it. So I like that. Take some time, reflect, and then move forward and continue on.
Right. I mean, you can even think about, too, is there something that maybe you can do to help your patient and client through, you know, obviously not solve their problems, but to make it a little bit easier, and knowing their situation can be beneficial for that.
Yeah. I think when I was a student, I had this mentality that I could just go out and change the world. And it took some time for me to realize, like, and you said it, like, you can't change everything.
No.
So picking one thing, or picking a handful of things that you know that you can have an impact on, mm-hmm. and going with that, I think that's just a wonderful consideration for other students or people that might be in this situation.
Yeah. I kind of can resonate with Chantel and some of that, like, especially, like, some of the patients that are having, like, active delusions and hallucinations, like, some of the voices can be, like, really tormenting, and, like, just seeing their response to, you know, dealing with that, like, even though they're in group and they're trying to participate, it's like, sometimes they can't because voices are in their head telling them, like, some really bad things. And it does get emotional sometimes, especially, like, when the voices are, like, tormenting them and it's like nothing you can do, and you can see, like, the patient is, like, really troubled by that, and it's like, you know, I wish I could just, you know, stop it for them, but I can't.
Yeah.
And then I think another emotional aspect is, like, just knowing some of the patient's histories. I mean, when I first went to one of the residential sites, the supervisor there was like, I'm going to let you read all of their charts and stuff, but, like, before you read the charts, I want you to, like, meet everyone and, like, kind of form your own opinion on them before you read the charts. So, like, I did that, and I got to know, like, all these guys, and, like, they were super nice. And then you go read the charts and see, like, they committed some, like, horrific crimes. And it's like, you almost can't believe it. It's like, really? They did this? Like, it doesn't even seem like it. But you just have to separate, you know, those crimes from the person and realize, like, they did some of these things when they were really sick. And now, like, they've got that under control. And, like, they're pretty much, like, a totally different person. Like, some people may be, like, afraid, or, like, you know, have some of their bias introduced when they read, like, some of the things that they've done, but I've been able to separate it because, first of all, like, a lot of the things happened, like, years ago. Some of this stuff happened before I was even born, and that was just a time when they were not themselves. They were sick. They're healthy now, so I don't really, you know, have a fear that they're going to do those things again, so it really hasn't impacted me that way.
I'm really glad that you brought that story up, because I think that's really, really important. And let's just spend just a little bit more time kind of discussing that, because it is very easy to read a report or read some sort of documentation on a person before you meet them, and then come up with your own kind of biases, your own perceptions and your own take on the situation. And I like that your supervisor was like, hey, you're going to go meet these people and then go read up on them. And I know for me, that's something that I try to do with my students as well, is let's go in, even if it's somebody that I don't even know yet. Like, we're just going to go in. We're not going to read about their history. We're going to go in. We're going to get a really good baseline of where they are. Then we'll go back and read their paperwork and kind of see if there's anything else that might fill in the gaps. But it allows you to kind of form your own perception on that person and really kind of meet them where they are,
yeah,
rather than taking somebody else's word or maybe some information that's from years ago that might not necessarily be as valid as it is today. And mm-hmm. so I think that's – I really like that you kind of went about it that way, because otherwise, if you would have read about them first, you probably would have gone in maybe a little more hesitant, maybe yeah. standoffish, like whatever. It definitely would have impacted how you met them and how you started to kind of develop rapport with them.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's jump into what kind of changes and what kind of things are going to be happening in the next couple weeks. Are you going to be leading more sessions? Are you going to be having more clients? Like, what are kind of the new responsibilities that you guys will be facing?
For me, I'm not too sure yet, but I know because my schedule is going to be changing a little bit because one of the supervisors I was with, he's retiring in April. So he has to use up like all of his PTO. So he's only going to be working a couple times a week and he has to train his replacement. So we switched up like some of the days. Like I'll only be with him once a week instead of two times a week. And then the one place that I was at once a week, I'll be there two times a week. And so because I'll be at one of the residences on a different days, like the schedule is a little bit different. So I'll be able to do like, they have a community reintegration team that comes in on Tuesdays. So we'll be able to do like more outings in the community. So my schedule will be changing up that way. As far as the groups, at least on inpatient, I don't know if I'll be having more groups to run because I'm already pretty much running at least two groups a day when I'm there. I don't know. Hopefully I don't have to run all the groups because that would be a bit much. But I don't know. Like, as far as more responsibilities, I'm going to conference next week. I added some of the things to my schedule, like different classes and presentations that are like relating to mental health. So hopefully when I come back, I can like present that to them and then maybe start like incorporating some of the things that I learned. Like, I know they have been trying to like incorporate technology and apps into treatment. And there was a course that I saw in the schedule about apps for mental health consumers. So I'm really hoping I can go to that course and, you know, find some information that can that I can apply to the setting that I'm at. Because I do want to change it up a little bit because some of the groups do seem kind of repetitive and mundane. So and I know they do like a lot of technology. So I really want to be able to come back and apply what I've learned and come up with some more like engaging and high tech kind of activities for them.
I love it. That sounds awesome. And I think conference is the perfect place for that. I'm sure you will get a lot of good information, good resources, good ideas, and come back with a whole new set of inspiration and motivation to use and to help your clients.
Yeah, hopefully.
So for me, I think that I will obviously be getting involved more in leading the groups this week and then probably leading the whole group eventually. Right now, my field work educator has two units. She's covering for somebody else. So she has a lot going on. So I have to just pick one group. I also have to come up with a group to leave with them that they can run in the future. So I'll probably start working on that. I have an idea of what I want to come up with. So hopefully it works out and I can come up with a group for everyone.
Okay. So really kind of starting to work on, would you call it a project or what?
Yeah, okay. I would say so, yes.
Okay, so really kind of having to start working on and focus more time and energy into developing this project. It sounds great, and I've loved just hearing an update about what you guys are doing and everything that you've been exposed to so far. If you guys had to think of maybe like one or two things that you would say to a student that's about to start their level two fieldwork, and this could be specific to mental health or just in general, what do you think would be like one piece of advice or one or two pieces of advice that you would have liked to have heard going into the fieldwork?
Take a deep breath. Calm, relax. Okay. It's not as nerve-wracking as you think it's going to be. And probably just be yourself. Don't try too hard. Kind of go in and be yourself. Take everything in. See how everyone's relationships work. And then figure out how you're going to be part of the team.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great advice.
Thanks.
I would say, like, take it one week or one day at a time. Like, I can't believe we're at the end of our third week, but I also think it's going so fast because we're like breaking it down by like, okay, week one done, week two, like you really have to take it one week at a time. And if you do that, it'll feel like not as overwhelming, like, oh, I'm going to be here for 8 weeks. What do I do? Because day by day, you complete those weeks it'll just start chipping away at your field work. And it'll be like, it's easier to manage when you just think of it like 1 week at a time. You made it through this week, then you're going to make it through the next week. Now we've made it through 3 weeks so far. The next week is going to be our fourth and we're halfway done. So I'd definitely say break it down by weeks or days if you need to.
Yeah, that's such an OT thing to say right there. Activity analysis, day, week analysis. Well, great advice, guys. This has been so, it's so fascinating, so interesting for me to hear how things are similar for you guys, how things are different. And also just to hear, because this is a practice area that I'm not as experienced in. So I'm learning with you guys kind of going through this process. And so I really appreciate you guys taking the time to come on and chat about this again. And the next time we talk, you guys are going to be more than halfway done.
Wow. I'm excited.
Me too.
It's crazy. It's so crazy. Like, and that's one of the things that I love about doing these series is because so much happens. You guys probably don't even notice it yet, but so much has happened just in the last, 3 weeks. And even though I'm not seeing what you guys are doing, just hearing the differences in how you guys are talking now compared to how you were talking, it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know the difference yet, so I'll take your word for it.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. 1, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. 2, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. 3, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
I don't know if you knew that. Yeah, I'm going to try to okay. So hopefully we can meet up.
First of all, I'm envious that you guys are going.
And
I'm
man. supervision. What's the word I'm looking
for? Oh, gosh. I can't think of it now. Never mind.
Promoting the I can't talk. Did your fieldwork supervisor or fieldwork educator? Hold on.
Hello.
Oh. Hello.
Are you there?
Did we lose Sarah?
I don't know. I
thought so.
It says
can you guys hear me
though?
Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Hopefully she'll come back because that happened last time.
it's really cool, and I think you're gonna go back and listen and be like, wow. Like, I remember that moment. Like, holy smokes, how far I've come.
Yeah.
Yeah.